Let me introduce you to Tom Davis, a name you may know if you watched Saturday Night Live in the early years when he was teamed up with Al Franken, his writing partner, since the two of them met in school. They spent several years on Saturday Night Live, then went away for a couple years, then went back, and Tom actually was with the show into the early 90s, and now has written about those years in a book called 39 Years of Short-Term Memory Loss, The Early Days of SNL from Someone Who Was There. Tom, welcome to 84 WHAS.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for calling. I'm delighted to talk to you today.
Nice to have you on here. And since Al Franken wrote the introduction on here, I guess he approves of you writing about your drug-laden history with him. But I can't help but wonder if the book had to be held until after the election.
Yes, it did. I didn't want to give ammunition to his enemies. And if you do read his introduction carefully, he does call me an alcoholic and a drug addict. So I don't think that he approves of it.
Is it weird for you, on the cusp, and maybe even closer this week than he was last week, he's on the cusp of becoming a United States Senator?
I think he was born for that reason. I really do. He's, as long as I've known him, he's always been involved politically. He loves politics, and he's has a very sincere belief about a public service and very high standards. And I think that the people of Minnesota are going to be very proud that they have such an outstanding senator.
All right. I don't want to make this about Al, because I want to talk about you and the early years of Saturday Night Live, since that's what your book is about. But since I mentioned drugs, and since you write about them extensively in the book...
I'm very candid.
Yes, you are. Take me back to the early and late 70s and the drug culture of the show, which, shockingly, was able to get more stuff on the air in that realm than you possibly could today, I think. Here we are in 2009, supposedly a more liberated and more liberal country than we were decades ago. I don't think some of the stuff you guys did on SNL in the first 5 years could get on the air today. What do you think?
Well, everything's changed. The world has changed since. And also, John Belushi died, and that was kind of the end of that party.
Yeah.
Death at a party, that's the end of it, you know?
Yep.
And it should have been for me, too, I guess. But and that's my own shortcoming, is that the world changed and I didn't. And that's why I probably live alone in the woods.
Well, what was the drug culture like on Saturday Night Live in those first few years?
Well, I have to speak for myself that there was plenty of people that did not do drugs, and I hope my book is clear about that. I mean, Jane Curtin never did drugs. Marilyn Miller didn't do drugs. Gilda didn't. It was a time when a lot of people experimented with drugs, and I was certainly foremost among them.
You were not experimenting. You were kind of like the lab professor teaching.
And I was an experiment. Yes, I was. And I did that. And if I've written candidly in my book, and I've been talk about some of my friends who are famous and some who are not famous, and some of them have teenage children, and they were a little not thrilled that I wrote about that. And if I had teenage children, I might not have been quite so candid. But I did make a choice in my life not to have children because of my substance abuse. And I would like to ask you, do you think I was responsible to do that?
Well, probably, considering that you continued to use them for so many years, even after Belushi's death.
Yes.
But I want to go back to this question of drug references and outright drugs on the show. I remember one Weekend Update skit where I think it may have been when Chevy was still hosting, where, you essentially told the audience to send us your joints, and there was a picture of somebody rolling a joint. I'm sure it wasn't. I'm not sure whether it was actual marijuana or not, now that I've read some of these books about the show.
He did get joints in the mail. He did.
People, could you do that in 2009?
No, I don't think so. Well, plus, I haven't been to the show in a few years, but I was guest writer several years ago, and there's no culture like that there anymore. Now they do it on Krispy Kreme and donuts and pizza.
There's a lot of Red Bull in the office.
Well, they have espresso machines all over the place. So it's all changed like that. And I think most of the world has, too. But there's always these, I think that most drugs should be legalized. And then it should be an issue between one's physician and pharmacologist.
Let me ask you about another famous incident in Saturday Night Live history. Famous, I think, because it only aired once, to my knowledge, and that was in 1977 when Lauren took the entire show to New Orleans for a live primetime broadcast that even you agree in the book was an unmitigated disaster.
Yes.
How bad was it for the people who were working on the show? Because I watched the show then and remember thinking to myself, this may be the biggest mistake in television history. Was it that bad for you while you were doing it?
No, we had so much fun. In that chapter, I end the chapter by saying thank you, Lorne, because it was such a wonderful experience. We had a wonderful time, and we spent $1 million, which was a lot of money in those days.
Yeah.
And nobody watched it. And it's never been a rerun. I would love to see it again to see if it was that disastrous. But we had a wonderful time.
You write in the book about you and Aykroyd trying to get into Hunter S. Thompson's hotel room because he happened to be in New Orleans at the same time, right?
That's right, but he wouldn't undo the chain on the door. Didn't let us in. If Danny had been by himself, he might have let him in.
Really?
There was a couple of us in tow, and the odd thing about Hunter Thompson, I really like the guy. I like his writing. Layla Nabulsi, who was a very close friend of mine, lived with him for 10 years. And I never met the man. I never met him. So it was just one of those funny things. You'd think that I would have. Danny was a friend of his. Danny's maybe my best friend. I just never got to meet Hunter Thompson. It's just one of those things that passed me by.
What do you recall about that New Orleans SNL show that you took part in, and while you were in the midst of it, had to try to figure out whether this was really working or not?
Well, I wrote a thing for John Belushi to appear as Mussolini on the balcony, an El Duce thing, because he did a great El Duce, and it was right at the top of the show, and he came out the Cabildo building, which was first built by the Spanish there on that Jackson Square in New Orleans, and he came out on the balcony, and there was 10,000 drunken revelers out there, and he exhorted the crowd, you know, this is going to be a some party, I'm going to tell you. And it was. It was an amazing party, and I hope I did it justice in my book.
The book is called 10 years of Short-Term Memory Loss, the Early Days of SNL from Someone Who Was There. We'll be back to talk more with Tom Davis in a moment here. Paul Harris for Francine on 84 WHAS. Degrees in Louisville. The Francine Show continues. Paul Harris filling in and talking with Tom Davis, who's written about his life in the early days of Saturday Night Live in a book called 39 Years of Short-Term Memory Loss, The Early Days of SNL from Someone Who Was There. Someone who also, by the way, appeared as an answer on Jeopardy. Congratulations about that.
Well, that was a funny experience. I was here at home alone, and I do enjoy Jeopardy, and the question came up. He was the former comedy partner of Al Franken, and this was at a time when Ken Jennings was well on his way to being the greatest Jeopardy champion ever, and everyone was stumped. And I'm going, come on, who was Tom Davis? Who was Tom Davis? And I had to laugh.
Even Ken Jennings didn't know it.
Stumped.
How bittersweet. You're on Jeopardy and they don't know you. Oh,
well, that
man.
Happens.
Yeah. You and Al had the Franken and Davis show, which appeared within Saturday Night Live many times, with you two doing all sorts of bizarre stuff. And you also appeared in sketches all the time, and you wrote many of the famous sketches. Like, one of my favorites of yours was Theodoric of York, Medieval Barber. That was yours, right?
Thank you. That was a remarkable show. That was the King Tut show with Steve Martin, and I was at the top of my game.
Yeah. Were you also there at the creation of the Coneheads?
I certainly was. Dan Aykroyd and I collaborated on that effort. And it was interesting how that came to be a sketch. It started with some kind of lame idea. We wanted to do science fiction on the show, and doing a sketch show like that, it's impossible to build big sets or have too big an idea. So we weren't sure where to go with it, but we had the inspiration to, because we were always known as talking heads, to make the heads as big as possible so that it went out of frame. So that was, we knew that was going to be funny. But it was Lauren's idea to put it in a living room and make it a family. So instead of the taking over the world, they're the incompetent, stupid aliens who lost the plans and the speech before the United Nations, and he ends up being a TV repairman.
It was a very, very funny idea and well executed, and I thought Jane and Dan had a terrific relationship there. You mentioned Steve Martin, who was so important to the show through those years. When he was going to show up on the show that week, did that make you as a writer know that we're going to have a good show compared to some of the other hosts?
We never had a bad show with Steve Martin. And if you put Steve Martin in your sketch, the sketch always came up. He could make half-baked sketch look brilliant. He was one of a joy to work with, and he still is, I'm sure. I would love to see him again.
You talked about big ideas on the show. I remember a sketch that was so big that it went two segments. A sketch called The Pepsi Syndrome, which was your parody of The China Syndrome, where you and Al actually appeared as talking minds.
That's right. You have an excellent memory. That was inspired, of course, by the Two Mile Island meltdown in Westchester. And it was at the same time that movie was out about a meltdown. So we had the amazing, and we also did it. It was kind of a parody of science fiction, because Jimmy Carter visited the plant and then became the amazing, colossal president.
Yes.
It was a very silly sketch, and we had Rodney Dangerfield in it too.
Oh, that was great when he comes on and talks about how big the president is.
Oh, I'm telling you, he's big. He can make love to the Holland Tunnel. Oh, he's so big when he moves around the house. I'm telling you. Rodney came and hosted it after that for a couple times because he was such a hit.
All-time classic, although I must correct you, it was Three Mile Island, and it was near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Well, you see, I got mixed
you're,
up there.
You're the one with
my
the short-term memory loss.
Suspect sometimes.
There you go. And may I ask you about another classic thing that you guys appeared in?
Go ahead.
A little movie called Trading Places.
Ah.
With Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy.
Right. Well, that was John Landis's baby, of course. And Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas were supposed to play that part that Al and I got, but they had some conflict, and so Danny went to Landis and said, you should get Franken and Davis. And we were thrilled, of course. We went to you have to show up at like 7 in the morning, and this is at a time when we would stay up all night and sleep through the morning. So we got there the first day, and they put us in makeup and costume and sent us to our trailer, and we slept till noon, and that went like that for 2 weeks. Nobody spoke to us. And then we get the knock on the trailer door, and they say, the director wants you on the set. It's like, well, we haven't gotten a script yet, and should I get a haircut? And it's like, the director wants you on the set. So we go to the set, and Landis is waiting for us with his hands on his hips, and he goes, come on, you guys. We go, well, we haven't got a script yet. He says, well, there is no script. I said, do I need a haircut? He says, the hair is fine. You're the funny guys. Make it up. So we improvised our parts. And Landis liked it, so we kept improvising. And, what was the first scene we did was... the first scene that we did was we're in the party car. And we're dressed as baggage handlers, and I had the line of... you can imagine how embarrassed I was when I saw that someone else came to the party with the same costume. And Landis liked that so much that he kept injecting us in the film. So thank you, John Landis and Dan Aykroyd.
And by the way, in the movie, your characters are supposedly stoned. I'm guessing that wasn't hard for you to play out. Kind of method acting for you.
Method acting.
Method acting all the way.
Yeah.
Tom Davis, the book is 39 Years of Short-Term Memory Loss, The Early Days of SNL from Someone Who Was There. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Paul, and I hope you and all your listeners have a wonderful day.
I'm Paul Harris. This is The Francine Show on 84 WHAS.